Newell's got some time off. I'm Dave Cohen. Glad to be filling in for you here on WWL. As you know, if you've listened to the show over the years when I fill in, I really like to spend the lunch hour by giving you an opportunity to share your thoughts with us. We program our shows, we pick our topics, we select our guests, and we try to bring you the most interesting, informative, and important information, entertaining too. But I always like to hear what's on your mind. So I love to have the lunchtime buffet, which during this hour, we'll have our topics, but if there's anything you want to bring to the buffet in terms of a potluck, you're able to bring anything you want. Call me or text me now, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line, and let us know what's on your mind and what you want to talk about. Topics you're welcome to talk about are anything, but may include the power outages, which we've learned so much more about over the last 2 hours here on this show, and realize how much we don't know, but a lot of reason to be suspicious at this time. A lot of red flags and a lot of questions that remain unanswered. And it really feels like we may have been fed a real line of bull about why those power outages were emergency and necessary on Sunday to 100,000 customers. And we're going to wait on more answers. Also be happy to talk about the recapture of three more of the inmates who escaped from the Orleans Parish lockup. Now we have 8 of the 10 in custody. Do you have more confidence now that they caught 3 more finally after days and days without catching anybody that they'll eventually get all 10 of them behind bars? And we can talk about LSU baseball. To help us do that, we welcome in WWL.com columnist Jeff Palermo. Hey, Jeff, how are things in Baton Rouge?
Doing well, Dave. An exciting time of the year for LSU baseball fans. This is what they look forward to all year long.
Absolutely. And last year, not so much, but the year before that, very much so. And it reminded us of the heyday of LSU baseball when we expected a trip to Omaha every year. But gosh, competition in the SEC, and I think that's what's really changed, has gotten so much more intense. After LSU showed that baseball could be a huge fan driver, a revenue generator, and popular, we've seen the rest of the SEC really start to compete in baseball the way they didn't used to in the Skip Bertman Gorilla Ball days.
Oh, I mean, so many teams now investing into the program, improving their facilities. Auburn's stadium is fairly new. Vanderbilt is doing renovations. Georgia doing renovations. I mean, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And then I really think it is post-COVID, Dave. I think it's been turned up a notch because you're seeing fewer and fewer great high school baseball players electing to go straight to professional baseball. They're turning down those big signing bonuses, and they want to play college baseball. They don't, and I think there's a couple factors for that, Dave, and that is, one, the draft has been shrunk down. It used to be as long as 40 rounds. Now there's 20 rounds, so there's fewer players that are being drafted. NIL helps. You can now
make money in college.
Yes. And play college baseball. Yeah, you got to go to school, but you can be smart about your scheduling and what classes you schedule. It's not too difficult to do both. And then,
basket weaving 101. Yeah.
Yes. There you go. And then when you go to play at a place like LSU, you're playing in front of 12, 13,000 fans. You go to minor league baseball, you're playing in front of 1,200, 1,300 fans if you're lucky in some cases. I think you're getting a better a lot of these players, I think, are realizing they're getting a better experience, and it allows them to develop at a better pace. And also in Major League Baseball, before, when they would draft someone, you would sit in the minors for years. Now, as the case, what we saw with guys like Alex Bregman and so forth, or even Paul Skeens, you get drafted. Man, if you're really good, maybe you spend 1 year in the minors, and then you're at the show. So because of that, I think the talent in college baseball is much better. You're seeing, especially on the pitching mound, and I think it's led to a better product, a more compelling product in my mind for someone that has watched Major League Baseball their entire life.
Yeah, I had a guy come down from Chicago not long ago, and I was watching the LSU baseball game. He says, "Wait, you're watching college baseball?" And I said, oh my God, yes, the level of competition in it is fantastic now. And and they were just surprised. I said, wait, I thought all the best players went to the pros right out of high school. I said, not anymore.
No,
that's been a great thing for college baseball. Maybe, I mean, it has. On the flip side, though, it's made it more competitive for LSU, and we can't. It's not a given anymore that LSU is going to Omaha every year because they have to face much more difficult competition in the SEC. But that means that when they do emerge from the SEC as a top 8 seed and number, what, 6 seed this year, that's really encouraging, and this must be a really talented Tiger squad.
It certainly is. And it's a team that's, at least going into the SEC tournament, was ranked number 1 in all the major college baseball polls. They've just been very consistent. I think that's, Jay Johnson has defined them or characterized this team as being very consistent. And I would agree with that. Yeah, they got swept at Auburn. That was a low point of the season. But heck, I mean, they're 43-14 and 3 of their losses came right there in one weekend. And they've shown the ability after maybe a tough loss or two to really battle back and win like 3 or 4 in a row. They've played some of the best teams in the league, and they've been able to win a majority of those series. They're really strong on the mound. I think pitching-wise, this might be one of the better pitching staffs they've had in a very, very long time. And they continue to keep developing guys. Jacob Myers on Saturday, I mean, this guy had trouble throwing strikes earlier in the season. They kept working with him, Nate Yetsky, the pitching coach, and then all of a sudden, you watch him on Saturday in the SEC tournament, he's throwing triple digits, and nobody can hit his fastball. I mean, it's rising, it's moving. He gets 4 strikeouts in 2 1/3 innings. So, to me, they got certainly enough pitching to bring home another national championship. The question will the bats be there when they really need them? And that's a question mark. I think they'll do fine at the box. They've been able to score a lot of runs at home, and they seem like a better offensive team at home. It's just when they get back on the road and go to Omaha, will they be able to score enough runs to complement the pitching?
Yeah, and Omaha, like Hoover, where the SEC tournament was, home runs come at more of a premium there. It's a more difficult part, especially the new park that they built. It's more difficult to knock balls out because of the conditions, the distances, and everything else there. But you got to love the fact that LSU is a top 8 seed. They're going to play all of their games at home, even if they're not the quote-unquote home team. They'll all be at the box through the regional and hopefully the super regional. And I've been hearing a lot of analysts feel pretty good about the level of competition they're facing, at least in the regional. We'll have to wait and see who they would potentially play in the super regional. Take us through what happens when the tournament starts in the regional, who they play, and how you feel about the opponents.
So it all begins Friday at 2:00, weather permitting, when they take on Little Rock. And Little Rock has the lowest RPI out of all 64 teams that made the NCAA tournament. So it's the second time, LSU last hosted a regional in 2023, and Tulane, who had the lowest RPI, I think Tulane only had 15 wins, came to Baton Rouge, and once again, LSU gets the lowest RPI team coming to the regional. So that's
rating percentage index.
Yes.
Which means strength of schedule and all other factors combined to determine how good is this team.
Yeah, their RPI is 243, and there's 300-plus teams playing Division I college baseball. So they're among the—
And what is LSU's?
LSU came in at number 10 when it was all said and done.
Oh, wow. Okay. 243 versus 10. Got it.
Dallas Baptist, who's the number 2 seed, RPI of 20. Rhode Island, RPI 68. But Little Rock gets in because they won their conference tournament. They won the Ohio Valley Conference tournament. They were the 8 seed. And they just went on a remarkable run where they won 5 games in 4 days, and it all came together for them, much like it did for Tulane in 2023. So you look at LSU playing Little Rock, that should be a victory on Friday. The other matchup then is Dallas Baptist and Rhode Island. And, Rhode Island has been a team that has shown that they're a pretty good offensive team. But the conference that they play in, the Atlantic 10, is not very strong. And in fact, they're the weakest number 3 seed when you look at the RPI in the NCAA tournament. So LSU's got the weakest number four seed, and they got the weakest number three seed in the Baton Rouge Regional, which is why a lot of analysts, including myself, is saying, man, this path to Omaha or the road to Omaha doesn't have a lot of potholes in it. It seems pretty smooth. I will say Dallas Baptist is a strong number two. This is a program that's used to playing in the NCAA tournament 14 years in a row now. They've made it to a regional. They're one of five programs to say that. LSU is one of them as well. This is a veteran team as well, especially in the infield. All these guys have been around for 3-4 years. I think that is always a scary factor when you got a team that's got a lot of veteran leadership, and they got some decent arms. LSU played them back in February. They won. That was just one game, 7-3. I think whatever happened in February on a Tuesday night, or Wednesday night, I should say, in Arlington, Texas, I don't think that really matters what's going to happen this weekend in Baton Rouge. So I think Dallas Baptist is a – I don't think you can overlook them if you're an LSU fan. But again, LSU goes into this regional as a heavy favorite to win it.
All right. When we come back, we'll ask Jeff about the Super Regional and the potential opponents that LSU faces should they emerge from the regional and then go to a Super Regional in Baton Rouge with a trip on the line to the College World Series in Omaha. I'll say this, after watching LSU baseball all season, this is a team that's built for double elimination. This is a team that's built for three-game series. This is a team that, while they may falter and stumble in one game, they're probably not going to do it in three games. So let's hope that you are right and that there are not a lot of potholes in the road, at least in the regional. We'll preview who they could face in a super regional after this with Jeff Palermo on WWL. Hey, it's time to show Dad some love, and WWL wants to help you. How would you like to win a Macy's $1,500 shopping spree just in time for Father's Day? All you got to do is go to WWL.com/contest for your chance to win. It's a national contest and really easy to enter. So whether Dad needs new clothes, shoes, outdoor gear, the latest gadgets, a Macy's $1,500 shopping spree would really go a long way. A special prize for a special man. Enter at WWL.com. Good luck and happy Father's Day from WWL. I'm Dave Cohen in for Newell Norman. And Jeff Palermo, our WWL LSU columnist, is with us on the live line. And Jeff, we talked about how things look pretty favorable for LSU in this regional this weekend as they try to advance to a super regional and then the College World Series. So let's assume that things do go well for the Tigers. They make it through the regional and they're hosting a super regional. Who does it look like could be coming to Baton Rouge, and how much of a challenge do they present?
Well, there were two things that I was looking for when right before the pairings were, well, going into selection Monday, if you would, for baseball, when the pairings were unveiled at 11 a.m. One is LSU a national seed. Felt really confident about that would happen. And, yeah, we found that out right at the beginning of the show. The other was, okay, the Baton Rouge Regional, which one is that going to be? Who's going to be in the other regional that LSU would face in a super regional? Will it be another SEC team? Because I think the SEC has proven, based on the fact that you have six teams from the Southeastern Conference among the top eight, six out of the top seven are all SEC teams. That tells you that's the strongest, strongest conference
by far.
And you really don't want to face an SEC. You would like a 2-week break from facing an SEC team. The next SEC team that you want to face is in Omaha. You'll take it then. You just don't want to face one in the Super Regionals. And I think LSU catches a break here too. Not to say that Clemson, who LSU will play the winner of the Clemson Regional, and Clemson's a very good team out of the ACC, but when you look at their team ERA of 4.95, and I'm a big believer in pitching means so much in postseason, that's not going to scare you. I mean, that's 68th best in the country. The number two seed in the Clemson Regional is West Virginia, an interesting team. They got better pitching. They've won a lot on the road. But again, the Big 12, not a very dominant conference. In fact, the Big 12 did not receive, not one team out of the Big 12 is among the top 16 and is a regional host. So that gives you an idea of how the Big 12 is looked at by the tournament selection committee. Now, Kentucky is a 3 seed in that Clemson regional. LSU played Kentucky in the 2023 Super Regionals, and that was a really good team. And Kentucky plays a unique style of ball where they're stealing, they're bunting, they're doing all kinds of things against you. But this was a Kentucky team that barely made the NCAA tournament. And if they somehow win the Clemson Regional and come to Baton Rouge again, LSU heavy favorites to beat Kentucky in a Super Regional series. So I think LSU catches a break here. I mean, look at Arkansas. Arkansas is the number three seed nationally, and if they win their regional, they could play Tennessee, the defending national champs, in a super regional series. I mean, there's no way that Arkansas would sign up for that. You don't want to face Tennessee.
They'd much rather LSU's path.
Right. Georgia, the number seven seed, they could play Ole Miss in a super regional series. LSU just saw how good Ole Miss is as far as they're pitching. They just got to the SEC tournament. That's a hot team right now. You don't want to face Ole Miss in a super regional series. And if it isn't Ole Miss that makes it, Georgia could play their big rival, Georgia Tech, in a super regional series. You don't want it. Then no, you don't want any of that kind of stuff. So I think LSU catches a break here. You get a Clemson team that's good. I don't think they're great. And it should be, again, a team that LSU should be able to handle and get to Omaha.
As long as they can get those bats going, you got to feel pretty good because, the SEC tournament was not any sort of wonderful demonstration of LSU's offensive power.
No, very frustrating to see them only get two hits over the last 15 innings of that tournament. And it has to get better. I think if we're talking, Dave, the day after LSU's season, and it's not after them winning a national championship, I think we'll be talking about, well, they just didn't score enough runs, Dave. I think that is going to be their Achilles heel, something where the offense just goes flat in Omaha. And yeah, maybe they score two or three runs, but despite LSU's great pitching, they give up five or six runs or four or five runs, and they end up losing. Baseball is a game of randomness. And the way to take the randomness out of baseball is to score a bunch of runs and blow out your opponent.
I wish they had that big heavy hitter at the DH position who could come in and you could count on them to bat at least 350 every game. But they just don't have that one person this year that they can put on the DH spot that you can really count on to get on base time and time again.
Well, I mean, and you look back at that 2023 team, you know, you had Dylan Cruz, you had Tommy Tanks, and then you had all these veteran hitters too, the Trey Morgans, the Cade Belosos. Those guys were just so important to what they offensively, what they did. I mean, again, and that's what scares me a little bit about Dallas Baptist, because they are a veteran team that LSU will most likely face in their own regional. That 2023 team, just a lot of veteran sticks in that lineup, a lot of guys that have seen a lot of pitching. Now, this team has seen a lot during the course of the season, because we've talked about just how talented the pitching staffs are in the Southeastern Conference and the pitchers that they face week in and week out. So they've grown from that. But, you know, other than Jared Jones, he's the one guy that's been around for a lot and has seen a lot of it. I mean, he's the one big, you know, Daniel Dickinson's a good hitter, but this is his first year in the SEC. You know, a lot of these other guys, it's been, Chris Stanfield has been around, but that team, Braden Joubert in 2023, I mean, just wherever you look, those guys, they had a lot of good veteran presence on that team. And that was one of my concerns going into this year, was that just not a lot of guys that have been around. So you'll be leaning on the Josh Pearsons of the world for LSU to get you a big hit. That's why you saw him pinch hit late in the game in the SEC tournament. Jay Johnson was rolling the dice, hoping that he would get a big hit to keep that game alive. And I found it interesting that he pinched hit for Stephen Milam, a guy that has really struggled with the bat this season, only hitting 200 in SEC play. And that was one of your best hitters at postseason time last year. It'd be nice to see his bat come around here for the next couple of weeks to help push LSU towards the national title.
Yeah, somebody find that bat and bring it to the plate and let's go, because that's what we need, is just a little bit offense with this great pitching staff. Jeff Palermo, always a pleasure. Anything else you want to share? Folks can read more from Jeff. LSU earns top eight national seed. Road to Omaha doesn't seem too difficult, as posted right now at WWL.com.
Well, the only thing I would add is the weather, Dave. That will be the fact. There is no coach in college baseball that studies radars and maps and weather than Jay Johnson. And so we could have some long days and nights at Alec Box Stadium over the next couple of days because we are in our rainy season at this point.
Yeah, and the forecast is for, well, heat, humidity, and rain every day over the next 7 days. So, yeah, it's the summer pattern in Southeast Louisiana.
Yes, yes it is.
It is what it is. Jeff, we appreciate it, and we know that you'll be there for every pitch and keeping us posted here on WWL and on our website at WWL.com. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Look at that. It's already Tuesday.
Yeah, I know. Weekend it's crazy.
Folks.
It's crazy.
There you go. All right. Jeff Palermo here on WWL. I'm Dave Cohen in for Newell Norman. All right. The lines are open for the lunchtime buffet. It's potluck. Bring anything to the table you want. What's on your mind on this Tuesday afternoon? If you've got something you really want to get off of your chest, get out of your craw and share it with us, now is your opportunity to do so here on WWL. I'll share some more of your texts coming up after this on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talking Text Line, 504-260-1870. One person just texted in and said, better keep your eye on Dallas Baptist. I think if there's any real threat in this regional, you're right. That's the one, and Jeff acknowledged that as well. More of your texts coming up next and your calls. Grab a line right now, 504-260-1870. Bring something interesting to the afternoon buffet. It's potluck, and we want to see what's on your mind. Dave, don't forget, today's the first business day since the power outages, one person texts us. I expect lawsuits. It is Louisiana. And I think you're right. I think we are going to see lawsuits from businesses, maybe from individuals. I don't know. You heard earlier about the refineries that had power go out all of a sudden that probably lost lots and lots of money in terms of having to then burn off product because the process couldn't be successfully completed when the power went out. So, yeah, there are going to be lawsuits. Is that necessarily a bad thing? No. If it helps get answers, sometimes the only way we get answers in situations like this is from litigation and from people being subpoenaed and called to court to answer questions. I know the New Orleans City Council a week from today will also be calling people to answer questions in front of them, but I'm not sure how 100% of the time regulators are always successful anymore in getting the truth out of people who testify before them. And the Public Service Commission on June 17th will subpoena people to appear before them as well to find out what really happened and why we had to, with just minutes notice, shut off power to 100,000 customers with no warning and no opportunity to do anything about it. 504-260-1870, the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Jackie, thanks for calling. You're on WWL. What's up, Jackie?
Hi. I've been meaning to call you anyway about the street stretcher outlaw.
You're talking about habitual felony offenders?
I called Boy Netchy one time on your show and asked him, does Louisiana have a three strikes you're outlaw? And he really couldn't give me a good answer. He said, yes, we do. But I don't understand what it means. I mean, California, I remember years ago, that was a big thing. If they were caught with marijuana and they were two strikes, you know, whatever, they went to jail, you know, forever, whatever.
Well, I can tell you, Jackie, I can tell you that Louisiana does have habitual offender laws that give judges the opportunity to increase penalties, jail time, and revoke certain other rights for habitual offenders. So each time a felony conviction is the result of a trial or a guilty plea, yes, there can be additional consequences. In what context are you asking, though? What are you getting at?
I assumed it was three strikes, you're out. Like Peter Schroff and I were talking about it. I don't think it's... You're going to Angola. You're out. You're gone. You're not on the streets anymore. That's what I thought it was.
And I would have to do a little more research because I didn't know you were going to ask that question. But I can tell you this. I don't believe from my recollection that it's a mandatory life imprisonment for a third felony conviction in Louisiana. But there are escalating penalties for additional convictions at the felony level. But I don't think it's like back in the day. I do remember probably a generation ago when there were states that had laws that said if you were convicted three times of a felony, you go to jail for life. I don't think that's the case in Louisiana. Chris, thanks for calling. You are on WWL. What do you bring into the lunchtime buffet, Chris?
Trying to reach yesterday. There is a tradition I see fading away, which is important, of on Memorial Day, with all the celebrations and us celebrating what these wonderful people gave their lives for, there was an empty place setting with the chair leaned into the table and a little note that it was reserved in memory of our veterans. And it's a wonderful tradition. In some bars, they would pour a drink and leave it. And I wanted to remind people of that tradition, that as we're celebrating all that they fought for, to remember them by simply putting a place setting and a reserved chair for the veterans.
And you don't see that anymore?
I haven't seen it. I own a set of 32 flags. I set that up for a local business, and we did it and set the reserve place setting for our lost veterans. But I haven't seen anybody else do it.
Chris, things change. We know that the one constant in our world is change. But we've talked about, and I touched on this yesterday. I don't know if you get a chance to listen when I was doing the program yesterday from 5 a.m. to 10 a.m. We talk frequently in this community about hurricane amnesia. You know, we haven't had a real serious, widespread, devastating hurricane since Katrina, now nearly 20 years ago. And I think that a lot of people forget or were too young to really appreciate what Katrina meant, that we kind of let our guard down and we don't appreciate the power of Mother Nature when we haven't seen it firsthand or experienced it in our own lives. I think similarly, we have not had a world war now in several generations. We have not had a true threat to America's safety, freedoms, and constitution like we did in the First and Second World Wars since then. Yes, the war on terrorism, 9/11, serious, serious threats to our feeling of safety and those kinds of things, but nothing like what we faced in World War II, where at some point had the Nazis continued their world domination along with the fascists and the others, that we truly could have lost our freedom here in the United States had that trajectory continued. I don't know that people today really get a feel for what it's like to be under the threat of a dominating enemy that is taking over the world. Do you?
I don't think so. I think we've reached a comfort zone. I got to mention this. As we're speaking, I'm watching a bald eagle circle overhead.
Where are you?
I'm in Hammond. I'm at radio control flying field on CM Fagan.
All right.
There are several. Yeah, there's several bald eagle nests.
Yeah, I see them frequently, but that's kind of wild. Yeah, why you and I are talking.
Going toward La Place. But yeah, amazing. But I wanted to bring that memory up, and it's still not too late to do it at the bars and businesses to lean that table and acknowledge those who gave their lives so that we could celebrate them.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it, and I think that's a great suggestion. But I think we see less and less of things like that. I think we see fewer and fewer American flags in general being flown, even on Memorial Day, 4th of July, and other patriotic holidays. And I think that we see less patriotism in general. I think part of that is that we don't feel a shared threat like we once did. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I don't wish that there were a new dominating worldwide threat to our safety, security, and freedom. I don't want that. But I do think that when you try to understand why perhaps generations now don't show the same kind of reverence to and pay honor and tribute to our war dead and those who paid the ultimate price, it's probably because there are far fewer people who are paying the ultimate price anymore. And we just don't have the same kind of threats that we had at one time in this world. And overall, that's a good thing, but it also has those consequences. Thanks for the call, Chris. And cool that you're seeing a bald eagle. Sam, thanks for calling. You are on WWL. How you doing, Sam?
Hey, Dave. I always enjoy when you're a substitute teacher. Even though you try to be objective.
Just don't spitball me, all right? No spitballs.
No. I'm not pumping you up. I'm serious, man. It's always enjoy you first thing in the morning. But even though you try to be professional and objective, I could even sense the anger in your voice reporting that. And there's, I'm glad Jeff and Craig chimed in on the danger with these power plants of this, like, unscheduled shutdowns. You know, it's almost kind of a lot of your AC people with your house. They'll tell you when there's a power outage, if you're home, throw that main breaker for your outside condensing unit. And that's an AC unit. That's not like a petrochemical plant. Now, it's ironic that this has happened here. And in Texas, if you remember 3 years ago with the ice storm, MISO, this unaccountable to no one network, I don't know where it is either. They were responsible for about 73 deaths in Texas because of the same deal. Now, in the wintertime, with so many residences and businesses in the South using natural gas for heating, how is it that they're short on electric in the middle of the winter out there? Now, what's ironic is that Louisiana, 70% of all fuels used in our country are refined here. Oklahoma and what used to be Louisiana was number one in natural gas production. But thanks to Mr. Pickens and fracking, I think Oklahoma's up there with us with natural gas. And, of course, Texas, too. How is it that this happens? And
Sam, I think you make some really good points, but I want to point out also that, and you said you could sense the anger and frustration in my voice. I am angry and frustrated because I feel like we are not being given the truth. You know, we are not being told what really led to these mandatory power outages. And that's what upsets me, is that I get that things happen. There are some conditions that are outside of our control. There are sometimes situations that either are mismanaged that lead to worse outcomes or that simply happen and we have to deal with them. But in this case, the more we learn about what happened Sunday, the more it seems evident that somebody screwed up somewhere, that it wasn't simply that we had too much demand and not enough supply. You can't simply blame it on two power plants being offline because those power plants had been offline for days or weeks. And we didn't see a sudden spike in demand as we're being led to believe, according to everyone I've talked to. And so, yeah, I'm frustrated and I'm angry because don't pull the wool over my eyes. Don't lie to my face and expect me to believe it. Just come on, be transparent, be honest, and tell us the truth. If someone screwed up, tell us someone screwed up and they mismanaged the grid and the distribution system and the transmission system. And that's why we had to turn off electricity all of a sudden because of an emergency. But don't blame the weather for the emergency. Don't blame a shutdown of a power plant for the emergency. Don't blame everybody else for the emergency. Tell us really. Why did we have to shut off the electricity so quickly? And don't make us wait days, weeks, or months to get to the bottom of it. Just tell us. But the problem is that everyone goes into self-preservation mode. They shut their mouths or they lie. And it takes us all of these hearings and subpoenas and lawsuits and investigations and threats to get to the truth. Why should we have to go through all of that? And that is frustrating and angering because don't believe what we've been told so far, because there are way too many indications that it was not simply a lack of supply of electricity and a over demand for the available electricity. It's becoming more and more evident. It's not nearly that simple, and we don't know the truth. I'm Dave Cohen in for Newell Norman. Harry, hang on. We'll let you bring something to the buffet coming up after this on the Equinart Jewelers Talk and Text Line at 504-260-1870. Someone tongue-in-cheek, I hope, texted us just now and said, yeah, Billy Ray's nephew flipped the wrong switch. That's all. I don't think it's that simple either. We'll find out, though. I am confident there's too much at stake here and too many people who were, in fact, impacted too greatly, financially and otherwise, that we won't get to the truth. We will find out. It's just frustrating. It's going to take a while. Six in front of one. I'm Dave Cohen, 1254 on the Tuesday afternoon. A lot of people confused about what day it is. Long weekends do that to our brains. Harry, thanks for calling. You're on WWL. What are you bringing to the buffet today, Harry?
I'm a little confused about Memorial Day.
What's confusing about it?
We had a president that said anybody who died in the military was a loser. And I haven't heard anybody
rebuke him. Did you hear?
Yes.
Have you ever heard the president say that?
Yes, I have, more than once.
Wait a minute.
What's your next question? What's your next question?
Well, because there's no video or audio that exists. All right.
Yes, they have. Yes,
for the record... Okay, yes. Harry, for the record, there was an article published in The Atlantic in 2020 that claimed that former President Donald Trump had said to others at a cemetery that people who died in war were suckers and losers. And
I heard this out this man's mouth.
Where did you hear it out of his mouth? Because I sure would love to find that video or listen to that audio.
I don't know if it was a occasion at the White House or wherever, but on more than one occasion, he said that. Okay. He actually, if you do some
there's
research,
a fake, there's
it's
a
not much.
Reuters,
you don't have to do much.
Reuters it's says there's a fake video out there that someone made of the president allegedly on Fox News calling people suckers and losers for dying in war. But that's been ferreted out as a fake. And Fox News says it never really happened. So
I saw this man out of his mouth. He said that. And for the world of me, but everybody wants to take up for him, you know.
Well,
like
I'm not taking up for him. I want
think
truth.
You are.
No.
It's the truth. It's the truth.
But how do you?
If
you were saying the same thing,
yeah.
If you claim Joe Biden said that, I'd ask you where you heard it and saw it as well. I'm not playing favorites here. I just want to know because there is no proof out there that the president ever really said that. There are only reports that he said it to somebody else, that somebody overheard somewhere at some time. All right. So
let me go even a step further. He absolutely said it about about McCain. He said,
"Oh yeah,
McCain
he called McCain a loser for being a prisoner of war. We know that."
And he was a McCain.
That
was,
did happen.
But he couldn't carry McCain's underwear because McCain was in the camp, the prisoner of war camp, and they were going to let him go because his dad and grandfather was an admiral. He said, "No, unless everybody else is gone, I'm not going to go." Donald Trump, that we know who's advantageous, who all out for himself and his family, would have never done that. Would you agree with that?
I don't know, Harry, but I do know you can't call me and tell me you heard Donald Trump say it yourself and you heard it come out of his own mouth without telling me where and when and how. And I just don't like where we're at now when we allow lies and misleading statements and incorrect facts to proliferate through our media and through our personal beliefs, and that we don't question where things come from and make sure it's the truth. And I'm not playing favorites on either side here. We'll go back to the whole illegal immigrants are killing and eating people's pets thing during the last presidential campaign when everybody, including Donald Trump, knew that was a absolute lie, but continued to say it anyway. Harry, we got to run. Thanks for the call here on WWL because we got to make room for Scoot. He's in for the next 4 hours, 3 hours. I always try to extend you to 4 hours.
No, it's just when I'm on the air, it's just when you're listening, it seems like 4 hours.
It's just when I hand it off to Tommy in the morning, he goes for 4 hours. And so I normally, anyway, Scoot is here for the next 3 hours. What you got coming up today?
Well, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about the American Music Awards last night. J-Lo showed cleavage.
J-Lo showed everything except what the censors wouldn't let her show. It was clear she is single and ready to mingle again.
Yeah, and it was the but it was the other cleavage. It was like, you know, butt cleavage.
Yeah,
you know,
she showed
like
them
she
both.
Showed like it was low. You know, it's a shame they couldn't find a dress to fit her because that was obviously just too small.
Well, and then she wore four different dresses and none of them fit her.
Yeah, imagine that. So we'll talk a little bit about that. I thought there was just a great tribute to Rod Stewart, who won a Lifetime Achievement Award. He just looks great. He's almost 80 years old.
You know, I saw him at Lakefront Arena. I think it was about 25 years ago. And he looks the same as he did then.
Yeah.
His fiddle player, she looks the same. I mean, the show was just as good last night as it was when I saw him a quarter century ago.
It's amazing. Wrapping up residency in Vegas, I would love to have had an opportunity to catch that. We also have a little bit of politics to talk about, and I'll remind you, we're biased toward the truth.
Yeah, well, I would appreciate more truth.
That would be crazy.
Great.
It's crazy.
All right, Scoot's up next, all of that and more. I'm Dave Cohen. I'll be back at 5 a.m. for my regular show, the early edition of WWL First News, and then I'll be back here from 10 a.m. to 1 a.m. for Newell tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you learned something. Use that rewind function. If you didn't listen to Eric Scrametta at 10 a.m., go back and listen to it. Fascinating interview about that power outage.